dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RAM, SIP, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio. After doing a whole lot of these shows, I have to try to do some different thing with my voice. I don't know. Just get over it. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to do tonight. Tonight being May 23rd, 2006, I am Stank Dog. Did I say this was episode 149, Bin Rev Radio? Yeah, whatever.
Yes, you did.
I'm not so good at this. And that voice you just heard is a new first-time co-host of the show. Everybody who hangs out in IRC might already know Tubiz, sorry.
Yeah.
Tubiz is on the show tonight. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on, finally.
Hey, we've tried
a few times.
I can add
some content.
You have, a burn.
Burn.
Yeah, you got girlfriends and things, see? That just kind of complicates timing and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, Tubiz and I are going to talk about a pretty interesting topic coming down the road here in a few minutes, but first, I do have a little bit of housekeeping, things to take care of today. I've got, I'm passing this on from Black Ratchet, everybody's favorite host. Black Ratchet is curious to know if we have any listeners in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. I believe he might be up in the area for something, so if you are in or around Regina, Saskatchewan, please email BlackRatchet at blackratchet.org. Wait a minute, did I say that right? blackratchet@blackratchet.org. There you go.
How can you screw that one up? It's so easy.
Yeah, right. Maybe we should tiny URL it for them. Maybe I'm supposed to... Oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to read it like beta, licorice, alpha, cock ring. I don't know what the hell those letters are. What? Whatever.
That would just take too long to say.
Yeah, you're right. I can just say Black Ratchet, and then I can't spell it, then whatever. Then I guess they won't meet up and have sweet, sweet love down by the fire. Or whatever it is they're planning on doing. I'm not saying anything. Just, you know, putting two and two together. I'm going to take a nice sip of my sweet iced tea, another Bin Rev tradition.
Ah. Crack open another frosty cold beer here.
What kind? What kind of beer? What kind of beer are you drinking there, Mr. Kevin Rose?
All I have right now is Bud Light, but I spent the weekend getting over a Guinness-induced haze.
Yeah, actually, I think I called in the middle of that. See, now that's... also, to biz of the BR561 meetings, and so you guys actually go, you have the whole meeting, have a good, productive meeting, talk about a lot of cool stuff, and then go get shit-faced drunk.
Yeah, I mean...
What more can you ask for? let's see, one other housekeeping thing, and I think most people probably know this, is that the last week's file was all screwed up. That is my fault. I apologize for that. I uploaded... Everything was encoded fine, as it turns out. I guess it didn't upload properly. I don't know how or why, but the whole thing was all garbled, and I think that caused it also to not stream, because the streaming server is retarded and only allows a certain bit rate to be played, and when the MP3 was all corrupted, it didn't know what the hell was going on, so I re-uploaded that immediately Wednesday, tested, and everything's working now. So hopefully people have listened to episode 148, the Rainbow Tales, because that was a really, really cool episode, and I learned a lot from it. So hopefully some others did as well.
I did too. I actually enjoyed listening to it, not only at work, but at home, because that just had quite a bit of information to pack into that hour and a half.
Yeah, it really, you know, I really wanted to cover the math, and like, Decius is just one of the first people I'm like, you know what, he's going to know this for sure. So it was good to get him back on the show again. And I guess that's it, unless you had some announcements. I know BinRev meeting was last week, so we don't have that coming up.
No, yeah, we just had our meeting last week. I actually had an article presented on a do-it-yourself hotspots for profit. I'm actually going to be putting that up on 561.binrevmeeting.com, hopefully later tonight. And I've got a couple of upcoming articles that I'm going to be writing, such as laptop physical security and physical destruction of documents to prevent dumpster diving.
Holy crap. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, I'm going to try and shorten that down.
You know what, then? As long as we're doing this, let's, because we're kind of doing a show and tell anyway, let's jump into the show and tell. You're writing a couple articles. Are you going to put all those up on 561, Ben? Or have you've gotten one done for sure, right? The first one you already presented.
I have to finish up the references for, because I did reference quite a few sites for equipment and whatnot. But
so coming soon.
Unless plans change, I do plan on putting them all up on 561.
Very cool, very cool. And for everyone out there, you know, I'll throw this out again. If you want to start up a BinRev meeting close to you somewhere, even if there's already one in the city. Like, I know Boston apparently is a very, has heavy traffic, I guess, and Boston can be broken down into a lot of separate areas because it is difficult, apparently, to get from one side to the other. So if anybody wants to set up a meeting anywhere, even if there is, like I said, there's already a meeting in Boston, if you want to set one up on the other side of the city or just outside of the city or something, you know, let us know. We are, we realize that a lot of people live in small towns out there. They live out in the Midwest and the South, someplace where they're not near a big city. So it's okay to start one in a small area. Just get a few people together that you know are going to make it regularly. Even if it's just friends you already know, go get the meeting started and other people will show up and follow. And let's see, anything else you wanted to bring up?
Not right now. I got a couple things I'm working on, but that's under disclosure.
Gotcha.
Non-disclosure.
I don't know. In case I didn't mention it, we'll give you free hosting for your website too. You'll get a NPA.
Just email us at 411@binrevmeetings.com if you have a meeting ready or already had your started one, and we'll set you up.
And one of us will get back to you. Now we want you to at least have one meeting. Go establish and make sure that you want to go through with it, that you realize and commit to it before we go making a website for it. We've had a few that we put up quickly for people and they never ever did anything with them, and it is time out of our schedule to set those up, so please make sure you're going to be able to continue it and make it as much as possible. So that's why it's better to get kind of a group of people you already know to start one. That helps you start off with a good group. Myself, actually, I've done a lot of work on the site, the sites, I should say, plural, especially, this is an announcement I should bring up, too, Hack TV Underground, Episode 1, the one with Droops and the Infonomicon Computer Club, a bunch of those guys from, filmed it, I think it was near Nauticon, I think it was the weekend of Nauticon, anyway. Their episode of Hack TV Underground was featured on a show on Tech TV Canada called Torrent. So they contacted us and asked if we minded using it, and of course we didn't. We want everybody to share it. Everything's under the Creative Commons license to allow that. So congratulations to them. So check that out at hacktv.org, which is now our official site. We've spun Hack TV off onto its own site, so it will not be tied on with BinRev so closely. And I updated the BinRev homepage, so if you haven't seen that yet, go check out binrev.com. I've posted some news on the front and some changes that we're in the process of making. So there's some cool stuff there. HackTV.binrev.com will now automatically redirect you to HackTV.org, and all announcements will be put over there, anything related to HackTV, that is. And that's about it. I'm still working on some things for Hope, but unfortunately I don't have any solid information yet, so hopefully next week. I keep saying that, it seems like, but I guess that's it. So let's do some email. Ben.
BostonRev.com.
All right, and our first email this week comes from Shadarak. Shadarak says, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Shadarak. I should just give up on pronouncing. I should just not care anymore. Just people are going to yell, so whatever. I'm going with Shadarak, who says, hey, I was listening to your broadcast on Rant Radio today, May 16th, while at work, and was unfortunately not paying enough attention. I heard you mention some sort of customizable mech game that you could build your own mechs and wanted to check out the game. I thought you said it was called X-Steel or some such. Unfortunately, when I got home, I could not find anything on X-Steel on Google. And when I went to listen to today's archive, the MP3 was gibbled. Would you do me a huge favor and email me back with some sort of link or information on this game? Thank you. All right. We did have an MP3 that was gibbled. I don't know. That's a good word. That was messed up, as I said earlier. Has been fixed now, so you can go back and listen to it. But quite honestly, I mean, maybe I'm just really, really senile, but I don't remember that. Do you remember what I don't remember what I said last... I don't remember what I said earlier this morning, let alone last week on the show.
No, I don't remember you saying that, but I will agree on the senile part.
Well, yeah. See, what I'm... So, our first email this week comes from No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that senile. I'm only a little bit senile. So, and you know what? Maybe he was listening to our friends over there on Gamer Radio over at HWHQ.com, Hurricane World Headquarters, HWHQ.com. And if it wasn't them, go check them out anyway. Good friends of the show, longtime friends of us. So go check them out. Support their... They're still putting out a great show over there, so go check them out. And yeah, the MP3 is up now, so I swear to you, I don't remember even talking about this, so... I can't help you out on that. I'd have to go listen to it myself, so you can do that now. All right, our next email comes from Iron Geek, who is also a good friend of the show. He says, hi, guys. There's a free service for cracking hashes using rainbow tables. Check out plaintext.info. That's plaintext.info. Not really a point in time to URLing that. So, plaintext.info, they give preferred treatment to team members, but anyone can submit a hash to crack. It supports LM, NTLM, and MD5 hashes. So, very cool, Iron Geek. Thank you for that tip. Hopefully, people will go try that out. Next email this week comes from Oxquan. Oxquan says, BenRev Hack TV site, that is binrev.com/hacktv, is out of synchronization, I think he means to say, with the current HackTV site, which is hacktv.org. So if it isn't a problem, maybe BinRev's site could redirect to HackTV site. In my opinion, it would be easier to maintain, but there can be problems with bandwidth. Oxquan, give me a break, dude. Give me a break. I put HackTV up one day, and then I got this email that night from Oxquan saying that they're out of sync. So give a brother a minute. Help a brother out. Give me a day to work on it. Damn. Man, help me out here. No, I'm just kidding. Oxquan actually is a longtime listener of the show as well, so I'm just playing around. But yeah, it's exactly... I put up the new episode, Hack TV Underground Episode 2. If you haven't gotten it yet, go grab it, hacktv.org. I did upload that to hacktv.org because that is going to be our main site now, and I did not and am not upgrading hacktv.binrev.com anymore. But it was late, and I was tired, so I did it the next day when I came home. But Oxquan beat me to it with the email, so it is forwarding over there now, like I said. And, yeah, all the bandwidth will be... And the other good thing about this is it lets me kind of watch and track the bandwidth and the downloads a little bit better by having it on a separate site. Because we have so many things on binrev.com that if I ever want to go looking to see how much bandwidth a particular file is eating up or how many people are downloading it, that kind of thing, it gets really, really tough to wade through these huge log files and statistics and stuff like that. So logically, it does help to move stuff off, and that's one of the reasons that we are doing that. So did that. I updated a lot of the other subdomains with binrev.com. The radio page even, some people might not have realized, but especially if you're using the podcast. But the radio page used to have this little, pretty much unnecessary splash page explaining that we've spun off ddphackradio.org to its own site. So that's not really necessary anymore. So right now, that one will redirect you straight to the archive, so you'll see the download links, which also have permalinks, by the way. If you want a permalink directly to an episode on your blog you want to talk about or follow up or roast us for a mistake or tell us how much we suck on a particular episode, you can put, you have the anchored link there, the little pound sign that you can link directly to that episode so people can read the show notes on it and link directly only to that episode, because we've got quite a few. What are we up to? 149 now. That's a lot of episodes, man. That's a lot of shit. So, let's see, where was I here? So, don't forget about the blog, another site we spun off, digitaldogpound.org. That is our blog, B-L-A-W-G. I know that's annoying, but I like it, so screw you all. And any news announcements of any kind are going to be made there first. So when we release Hack TV Underground episode, it'll go on hacktv.org, but it'll also go on digitaldogpound.org. So go check that out. Subscribe to the RSS feed for that. Throw it on your sites, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, click on an ad or two while you're there. Help a brother out. You know what I'm saying? And our final email this week. I'm going to take another sip of iced tea here. And I know that's terrible to tell people that I'm drinking on the radio, but you know what? Screw you guys, I'm going home. Wait a minute, I already am home. And I'm buck-ass naked again this week, in case I didn't say that.
Oh, man, that's pretty sexy. Can I get a webcam shot of that, please?
Oh, that's the next evolution of the radio show, is to have a webcam recording me while we're doing it. Yeah, that'll be good stuff.
So we're going to now have a podcast and a vlog for this.
Oh, don't...
Or a podcast.
Not vlog. No. Vlog is not... Anyway. let's see. Our last email this week comes from Sliskerm. Sliskerm says, "Hey, I'm a regular listener, but listening to show 148, Rainbow Tables, had me awaiting the mention of Derek's boot and nuke at dban.sourceforge.net. Or sf.net, by the way. Quoting from the site, quote, "Derek's Boot and Nuke, DBAN, is a self-contained boot floppy that securely wipes the hard disks of most computers. DBAN will automatically and completely delete the contents of any hard disk that it can detect, which makes it an appropriate utility for bulk or emergency data destruction. So when the, quote, theoretical time comes, put the disk or floppy in your drive and turn on the laptop. For the uber paranoid, you could leave the disk in the drive and remember to take it out whenever you use it. Just giving a popular tool a mention." Thank you very much, Sliskerm, because that is actually a great segue into our main topic tonight. Well, actually, that's going to be our second topic. The first topic, the main part of the show tonight, is going to be, and this is because Tom requested it in IRC, I'm going to do a full review of the Trio 700W. I didn't spend enough time on it before, and I think Not Theory talked about it a little bit here and there. So instead of doing mini reviews, I'm going to do a full review on the Trio 700. So probably I'm thinking in 20 or 30 minutes I can cover all of the features of the Trio. And then when I'm done with that, we're going to move into some data recovery, forensics, data destruction, that sort of thing. So, Tom, this is going to be for you. Wait a minute. Actually, you know what? I'm going to save the Trio 700 for later. Let's just go straight into the forensics. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, but let's make sure to do the 700W review all next week.
Yeah, okay. Next week's show will be a full review of the Trio 700W and how much I hate that phone. So, and maybe I can get Tom on for that episode because I think he's really knowledgeable about that subject. He can probably speak better than me, too. Joking aside, we are going to talk about data recovery and data destruction and forensic tools that are out there to help you, since this was, and actually this is a pretty popular topic. In the forums, this comes up quite a bit. I do get emails from people. I got a couple other emails that I didn't read on the air tonight about the same subject matter. So this is actually something that people are interested in. There's a little bit of mixed knowledge out there, so we're going to try to talk about it a little bit. So let me, if I may, start off a little bit with some general overview of what exactly we're going to be talking about. data recovery, meaning, you know, and this stems from an email last week, and again, multiple mentions in the forum. So, people may have, and everything we're about to talk about is going to be hypothetical, possibly what if kind of scenario. So, theoretically, if somebody has something on their hard drive that they are embarrassed of, or don't want to be found with, or just simply respect their privacy and don't want people nosing through it, may want to delete those files so that no one sees them. Well, I think probably most of our listeners do realize that when you delete a file, that it doesn't really get deleted most of the time, especially with any Windows operating system. But what they normally happens is all your files that are out there, they're stored. Remember, these are magnetically stored on a hard drive. These are signals, positive, plus, minuses, a bunch of tiny, tiny magnetic signals stored onto a hard drive. And what happens is that in the allocation table, in the operating system, what they will do is point to a specific location on the disk where that data is stored. That data, again, in the form of all these magnetic signals. Well, when you delete a file, it doesn't actually go and reset all of those signals. All it does is delete that pointer to where the file used to exist. And by deleting that pointer, it doesn't know that there is a file there anymore. Technically, those bits are still sitting there and can be, and if you remember back in the old days, there used to be a command called undelete. And you could undelete files because it knew that it was still there, and it still had it kind of in the background. It knew where to look and where to find stuff, and it could still recover data. It's not quite that easy anymore, but there is data still there, and they don't actually get overwritten until the file system or the operating system actually writes over that physical portion of the disk again. So you delete the pointer to the file or delete the pointer where that data is on this particular track, on this particular platter, but the data is actually still there. So until it gets around to writing something else in that location, it's now flagged it and says, I'm not pointing to that location anymore. It's free space as far as I'm concerned. But technically, it's never been deleted until you write something else on top of it. And the way the file systems usually work is it's pretty random. It's wherever the read-write heads happen to be. It'll try to write the file as quickly as possible, which is why your disk gets defragmented. It doesn't, like, put everything in nice, neat order. And I'm sure everybody also knows that you defragment because files are scattered everywhere. And it'll try to put them all in such an order that it'll make them a little bit quicker and more efficient to read. So that's what we're talking about here in very, very general terms. There's also something that comes into play called a journaled file system. Now, a journaled file system means that in case of emergency, and feel free to interrupt me if I say something off here, but a journaled file system is, well, kind of like in case of an emergency, if your OS gets shut down improperly, it can still recover some of that data. Everything is journaled, which is good. It's good for stability. Kind of got flags. It's kind of got a log of everything that's going on so that if something does happen, that it can kind of restore itself and pick up where it left off and try not to lose any data if it can. Now, this is really good for stability and recovering your data. You know, you're really happy if your hard drive dies and you're able to boot back up and, hey, look, my Word document, it says it was in progress. Do you want to restore it? Yes, you're happy. But for privacy advocates, when you want data to be deleted or you don't know that you don't want there to be any signs or traces of data, it's not exactly the best thing. So journal file system is something to keep in mind in a lot of the things that we're getting ready to talk about. So because of these and many other weaknesses in the way that these files and these things are handled, there are quite a few tools out there. And I guess forensic tools, is that a good term? Is that the way they're normally described?
Yeah, they're just called forensic recovery tools, or okay. Just like you said, forensic tools.
Okay, so forensic data recovery tools, for lack of a better word, we'll go with that. But forensic tools out there, are they... Now, I've never used... I use some of the tools to try to protect and keep my privacy, but I'll admit I've never used anything to try to recover data. It's one of those things like backup software. A lot of people will make backups and never actually test them to see if they restore, which could really suck because if you're in an emergency and you got to restore data and it doesn't work, you didn't do it right because you never tested it. So I'm kind of on that boat here. I'm wiping my disc. I'm pretty confident that I'm pretty safe, but I've never actually tried any of these forensic tools. But you actually have some experience with quite a few of these, right?
Yes, I do, actually. I've used a couple not only at school, but at work as well.
All right, very cool. Well, how many of these, I mean, we've got quite a few here we wanted to talk about and touch on. Are there any open source or free ones that maybe we should start with, or are most of these things you have to pay for? Because this is pretty specific software, and usually when you have software this specific, it's usually pretty expensive too.
Well, out of the ones we're actually going to talk about, the only one that you do, there's two of them you actually have to pay for. That's Encase, and the other is actually X-Ways Forensic Edition. Those are the only two that you actually do have to pay anything for.
All right, well, let's talk about Encase, because I've actually heard quite a bit about that one. I think that is that one of the more popular ones?
If you're actually in the forensics industry, that is the industry standard, and if someone hears you say that you use something else, you're probably going to be laughed out of your job.
All right.
It's a really heavy-hitting program. I've used it before in school to actually test DBAN, since it was mentioned in an earlier email, and I had some pretty interesting results on that, but I'll talk about that in a bit. There's three different types of actually Encase. There's Encase Enterprise, the Field Intelligence Model, and then Encase Forensic.
They
all pretty much do the same thing.
I'm sorry, just to clarify, DBAN, again, was Derek's boot and nuke that was referred to in that email earlier, the one where you could boot up and it will automatically reformat your hard drives and stuff like that?
Yep, and just a side note, DBAN is actually GPL'd, so it is free.
Cool.
Unlike some of the others that I've found.
Good deal.
All right, so three products. I've only used actually Encase Forensic a couple of times because there's not been a lot of times where I've actually had to do forensic recovery, and like I said, it's a heavy-hitting program.
Right.
You can't just use this on any old computer you've got sitting around or on your laptop. It needs power. I was going over the specs for this stuff last year, and it was like, you need a dual processor machine and like 2 gigs of RAM.
Wow.
And tons of storage. From what I've been looking over from other forensic forums, they suggest you at least have a terabyte of storage in case you have to do a lot of recovery on a lot of different images.
Wow.
And yeah, this stuff isn't just like, oh, I'm going to download this program and pop it on my old P3500. You do that, you're going to be waiting a long time to actually do any kind of recovery or investigation.
Now, is this something that people can buy off the shelf, or is this something that's only available to, like, law enforcement, or you know, do you have to have some kind of clearance? I mean, can anybody get this?
I think anyone is actually able to buy the Encase Enterprise Edition, but as far as the Field Intelligence Model and the Encase Forensic Model, they are only available to law enforcement and government, or if you have deep enough pockets, but if you really need it, you're going to be in law enforcement.
And this is, the name of the tool is Encase, and who is it made by? Is there a website we can give out?
Yeah, it's actually made by Guidance Software. That's guidancesoftware.com. So, you can just Google Encase, and it's the first hit.
Okay, cool. All right, and you said you've actually used it. You've actually gone through and from start to finish and used it. And what did you find?
Well, in class, we actually used it to test two different things. One was how well something like Derek's Boot and Nuke actually works, and how well other tools that are comparable to DBAN actually work. When we actually formatted with DBAN, we did the standard DOD 7 wipe pass, and Encase was able to pretty much pick up everything we did
on
that disk.
Maybe this is a good point maybe to kind of break for just a second and talk about the DOD standards, because there's kind of three different standards. Well, there's more than three, but there are three fairly common standards. One is a 3-pass, one is a 7-pass, and one is a 35-pass.
Yes, but the 35-pass is not actually from the DOD. It's from a guy called Peter Gutman.
Gutman, right. So, wow, that's interesting. what I normally set mine at is just to do a 7-pass. But frankly, I'm not really that concerned so much. If somebody has in case, they might be able to recover it, it sounds like now, but I tell you that 35-pass takes a long time to wipe.
It takes a long time to do it, but after reading a couple papers from Mr. Gutman, I actually found out even he suggests that with modern hard drives, you don't use that technique because of the way these drives are actually encoded.
Yeah, and actually this gets into some mathematics, and I say this on the show a lot. Computing is very much based and housed with tied very closely with mathematics and statistics. And I can't emphasize that enough. The way these things are storing data is very interesting. And the 35-pass model especially I found interesting because when your data is stored on a hard drive, you know, you have basically a positive and negative signals, or mm-hmm. zeros and ones, actually, just to go with the traditional. Let's go with the zero and one. When these things write data, it's not always necessarily a perfect 1.0. The way those heads work, there's a little bit of variance in them. Sometimes it can be 1.05, sometimes it can be
0.95. Yeah, that's what I found too. It's probably a tenth of a percentage variance each way.
But that's what makes it's that flaw and the way that thing works that a lot of this stuff is based on, because you may have something that's written at 1.05 and then overwrite it later, but not completely overwrite it, so it can be undone, so to speak, if you can figure out those patterns, which maybe that's why it needs so much power. But you can actually go back layer by layer and recover files, even if they have been written over. That's the really scary part that I found out, and that's what I really want to hear how some of the success stories we've had with some of these other ones, because of the way this thing works, wiping over, and this brings us back to the 3, 7, and 35 pass. What that really means is, that free space we talked about earlier that you've reallocated, it's taken the pointer out, it's just going to go right back and write data over that. If you had a 1 meg file, it's going to go back and write 1 meg of data across that sector or sectors, tracks, and overwrite everything, and then overwrite it again, and then overwrite it a third time. Now, that's oversimplifying. There are actual algorithms that they use to do that because of that variance. They purposely pick things that they know are going to trigger those things in such a way that it will throw off the mathematics so that it's not easily undone. 3 is more easily undone. 7, when you've overwritten it 7 times and flipped all these bits back and forth, 1s to 0s so many times, that 5 plus or 5 minus, that 10 variance is much less likely, is that proper English, to be recovered. Yeah. And then obviously the 35 pass. You're writing over that thing 35 different times. Those switches have been toggled so many times that, again, this is many years ago. This was 96, was it? I want to say.
It was in 96 and presented it at Usenix in 1996.
That these ideas were developed and these number of passes were analyzed and discussed. Now, again, you were saying earlier that with modern hard drives, some of this has changed. So, I'm sorry, I kind of sidetracked you from NCASE a little bit there, but...
Oh, no, that's fine. I mean, I was actually thinking about talking about the specs that are actually used commonly in wiping software, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
But yeah, as I said, I have used NCASE, and this program, it's for a very specific use, even though people tout it to be kind of an end-all, be-all of programs. Sure, it can go through and find deleted emails that you might have in an outlook.pst file, but that's not totally what it's for. It's looking for things that have really been deleted that you have been implicated for, such as things like child pornography, pirated movies, pirated music, things of that nature. They're not going to really care about your emails unless they find data in there that is pertinent to what they're really looking for. I mean, NCASE Forensic Edition is huge. It's got a scriptable API that's actually based on C++ and Java, so I know a lot of people out there can use it. It supports nearly every single file system known to man, including every single one that's included in Windows, VMware images, DD images, certain Palm devices, certain RAID arrays, almost every single Linux file system known. I mean, there's almost nothing this program can't do.
So
like I said, people say it's kind of a Swiss Army knife of forensics, and that's both true and false, because people will misuse it for extremely small things that they might need to look for that can be accomplished with other tools.
Well, so is this also, is this the one that you hear stories sometimes about how photos are recovered from someone's camera phone, the file systems, the Palm devices and things like that? It can read a lot of those file systems as well?
Well, not so much on the phones, but for the Palms, yes. They actually are, in cases, actually working on a module for mobile phones, because it has become such a prevalent, massive form of communication in the last, 10 years, and there are actual forums and websites devoted entirely to mobile forensics, and that's a huge, huge burgeoning industry as it is right now.
And I'm sure, though, that it will read data from, like, a secure digital compact flash disks and things like that, which a lot of phones use.
Oh, yeah.
So
it literally reads just about anything you can throw at it.
Interesting. And how about this API you're talking about? I'm not sure I understand what that would be used for, to write a script.
Well, it's actually called InScript, and since it's written in a way of C++ and Java, that allows a lot of people to easily write modules or plugins for it to automate looking for headers or certain hex offsets or byte offsets they can actually find in the data, so that they don't have to go through and troll through
everything,
sometimes gigs of data to look for a picture.
Yeah, that's useful. That's handy. I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of these times, these things are used on multi-terabyte RAID arrays, and who wants to sit and cludge through a 6-terabyte array when you can have a plug-in written for it already, load that up, and it'll actually automatically search for you and shorten your time to court.
Well, is it 6 gigabytes of prawn?
Yeah, but unless you like 5-year-olds, I wouldn't look at it.
Yeah, I'll pass on that one. Alright, well, and I know we kind of said this about law enforcement, and we're joking around with those examples, but I'm sure that, like, some big corporations or something, if they lose a server, an important data on their hard drive, some proprietary source code or something like that, I'm sure they're willing to pay top dollar to get that data restored too. So it's not always busting hackers and child pornographers. Sometimes there's absolute valid reasons to pull data that you may have simply lost from a server crash.
Yeah, InCase Enterprise is actually written for large businesses and corporations in mind for system auditing and compliance for things such as HIPAA. But those are really used for, like you said, accidentally deleting something and trying to recover it. But I haven't seen a lot of corporations that use it without actually contacting a consultant to do this for them instead, because corporations, frankly, don't have the time to do this.
Yeah, and there are quite a few companies, that's a good point, there are quite a few companies that is their sole business, is data recovery services. There are companies that make quite a bit of money doing data recovery services.
It's a very lucrative business, and if you've got a little cash or you can get a good loan, you can get some hardware for it, get an electron microscope, and you could pretty much be set for life if you can figure out this stuff.
Yeah, and I remember, I hate bringing this up because I don't remember exactly which software package they tested, but CNET, I think it was, did a test where they went and bought, I don't know, 100-plus hard drives and systems off of eBay, and then used one of these tools to recover, and they just talked about all the data. They found just tons and tons of prawn. Joking aside, they found tons of prawn, but they found, credit card numbers, people's private emails, et cetera, using these tools. So this is something to think about if you ever want to sell something online or anything like that. Be careful what you may have left on there, no matter how much you think you might have wiped it.
Oh, yeah, there's a company in the UK, I'm not sure of the name, I think it might be Data Back. I don't want to say that's truly the name, but they are actually under the employ of Western Digital and a couple of other large companies, and they did an exact same test where they literally bought hundreds of hard drives, threw InCase at it, and compiled the results and said that even most people just do a Windows format and think that's good.
Right.
But they actually did contact the sellers of these products to let them know that, hey, your solution for this is not adequate enough to be resold as something else, and you really need to step this up.
Or in less polite terms, you fucked up.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay. I mean, what they have to say in legalese, of course.
Ah, gotcha. All right, so that's a big Swiss Army knife, as you said. That's one of the most popular ones. But there's plenty of others, I believe. I'm not as familiar, but I certainly know that several others exist.
Oh, yeah. I've actually used two other forensic tool kits that are really popular in the open source community and in some law enforcement institutions. The first one is actually the Coroner's Toolkit, or TCT. It was originally written in 1999 as a proof of concept for a Unix-based programming class by a couple of guys, and it was really kind of the first, I guess, fuck you in the face of NCASE.
Right, exactly.
Because up until then, there was really nothing that could compete with it that was open and was free. Now, it's not really updated that much anymore, so a guy named Brian Carrier actually started looking at the source code and took a couple of ideas from TCT and actually wrote what's called SleuthKit, and that's from sleuthkit.org. And he took their tools, mainly they were all Perl-based, so he rewrote a lot of them in C to make them more efficient and faster. And he actually did leave some of them, like I think it was MacRobber and another tool. They've left those in their original Perl forms. Now, as he was doing this, he found that, I mean, using all these command line tools kind of got tedious if you needed to do something quickly. So he wrote a front end to it called Autopsy. And it's just a fancy web interface to the SleuthKit toolkit. And it, I think, in a way, Autopsy is a lot better than NCASE because it lets you add case numbers, have a chain of evidence, where you can say, all right, I've got this evidence, and this is what I found, I'm actually handing it over to someone else. It does a whole lot that I actually think law enforcement really uses but can't find in tools like NCASE very easily. And everything in Autopsy is right up front. It's in your face about what data you can put in and what data it needs and what data it's found. And I personally have used it far more than NCASE, even though I do
really
own both of them.
Interesting. Yeah, and actually,
it also helps that SleuthKit, Autopsy, and the Coroner's Toolkit are included on most Security Live CDs.
Yeah, and something just popped into my head too. I think it's common knowledge in the forensics industry, I guess, to use a term, that the way this happens is worth mentioning anyway. Let's say they come and bust you and take your computer or whatever from you, I know that it's very common policy and heavily emphasized anyway as part of the standards of how to deal with it, is they know or look to see what operating system, if your computer's on when they bust you, they, you know, immediately figure out what operating system you're on and therefore either know or have an idea what file system you're using and how to turn it off in such a way that it does not destroy any data, swap files, anything that's in memory, written in temporary space, anything like that. And part of the policy is to get that hard drive and not touch anything on it. First thing they do is make a copy of it, make an image of it, and then that's what they actually run through these applications. They don't ever want to touch the original drive so that there's no accusations of changing data, foul play, or anything. They make a copy and run these programs against them.
Yeah, and what they usually do is use something that's called a write blocker. NCASE includes FastBlock SE, which is a software edition of a popular hardware tool called FastBlock. But there are a couple other tools that actually are what they call forensically sound, and it's exactly what you said. It will image everything that it needs to image without actually modifying or touching the original host data. And these products are, I wish I had some, but they're extremely expensive.
All right, well, what else is there out there? Now, are these open source? Are these free? Are these, I'm not sure
yeah.
which...
The Coroner's Toolkit is open source on its website. If you go to porcupine.org/forensics/tomcharlietom.html, you can actually download it and get the source for it, since it's all Perl-based.
And we should...
Sleuth Kit is GPL'd as well.
And that's it. SLEUTHKIT.org. And I should just interrupt and mention that we're throwing a lot of URLs out on this episode, I realize. So these will all be available in the show notes, clickable to every one of these that was mentioned. So some of these URLs are longer than others, more difficult to read on the air. So we'll just make all these quick to click on in the show notes and get them up as soon as possible. So we'll avoid reading as the train passes by in the background there.
Yeah, there's the train.
Our first ever hobo recording from the train. I don't hear you getting tired as you're trying to jump on the train. Are you already on?
Yeah, I got on a while ago, but I guess the guy's coming across an intersection and needs to let people know to get the hell out of the way.
Gotcha, I see. Well, hey, listen, when you have to jump off the plane, when it slows down, make sure you let us know, and I'll cover for you somehow so that it's not all awkward and whatnot.
All right, I'll try to keep the rush of the wind out as soon as I jump out so I can continue on.
All right, sounds good. All right, so did we have, there's a couple more here maybe that are briefly worth mentioning, and then we'll move on to some of the utilities to help, I guess, protect you from some of this or maintain your privacy from some of these.
Yeah, there's, I want to talk about two live CDs really quickly. One is called FIRE. That's the Forensic and Incident Response Environment Boot CD. Basically, it's just a Linux live CD that contains, I think it is 197 or 200 tools on it. It includes a lot of things like a UPX packer. It includes Sleuth Kit and Autopsy, something called FATFACK, which is a DoD-developed tool for undeleting files from FAT file systems. Steg Detect, which is used to detect other data in images for steganography, and a whole bunch more. And then I've actually never used it, but I have a lot of friends that do forensics that tell me it's actually a pretty good live CD. Now, the next one I want to speak of is Helix. I personally use this one. It's from a company called eFence, and it's another security live CD. But it's got a twist.
What's that?
Linux live CD with the commonly available tools that are in FIRE and most live CD distributions, such as FLAC or Backtrack. But what they lack that this one has is a Windows-only partition on the CD, if you want to call it that. And this is used for live data analysis and imaging. And it is forensically sound, according to the company. Now, I've used it once at work, and I found that it was actually forensically sound in what I was using it for.
And
but
you had good luck with it? It worked?
Yeah, I was actually trying to back up a girl's computer at work, and she said she didn't want to obviously lose any of her data, but she actually had a virus on her computer that was spreading to our network rather quickly, and it was starting to corrupt her Windows installation, so I had to pop something in that I had really quickly to hopefully back up her data to our network, which Helix actually helped me a great deal with. So I was able to back up, I think, 95% of what she wanted without any problems whatsoever.
So, when you were looking through that partition later on, did you find any other good... Never mind, don't answer that. Okay.
I've got ethics, man. What are you talking about?
Ethics? What is that?
Yeah, what are those?
There are no ethics when it comes to Prawn.
No, but, like I said, that's the only one that I found that has a Windows part of the CD to help you do this in Linux. And I mean, it searches, you know, graphic files, temp files, temporary internet files, just about anything you can think of.
Okay, good stuff. I think, now we did an episode quite a few years ago, a couple of years ago, on bootable CDs. I do remember FIRE, discussing F-I-R-E. I don't remember if we talked about Helix before, but I'm going to look into that myself now. That sounds, especially since you said you've used it and had good luck with it, I might have to check that one out.
It's a distro that's actually about, I would say, at this point, 3 years old. And, I mean, The Windows part of it is nice. It includes chain of custody forms built into the CD for automatic printing and chain of evidence letters that you can quickly print out and fill out. I haven't seen anything else aside from InCase that has that kind of information in it, because no one has time to sit there and write a chain of custody form by hand or write a chain of evidence letter by hand.
Hmm. That's interesting. It's a nice little tool.
No, I really think it's an excellent tool, and it's pretty underrated from my experience.
Yeah, especially if you have to do that frequently.
Yeah. And,
well, I tell you what, let's kind of segue then from that side of the house, the forensic side of it, to the more like the protection side of it, consumer side. I'm not sure exactly how to word it. The protection side of things, I guess, is the best way to describe it, is, you know, what can we do to protect our privacy? I mean, it's one thing to, you know, recover data that you've lost, that you want to recover, but if you're willing to take that risk that you don't, you know, you're not going to, you're confident in your own backups or something like that. And actually, that's another interesting term. You can wipe and secure your disk all you want, but if you leave the backup on another drive that's not wiped and not protected, you're pretty much screwed. But
yep.
That's neither here nor there. Kind of like what we mentioned earlier about, you know, overwriting those files and how many passes. This is where this really comes into play, is writing over there however many times you're going to write over it to try to make that data irrecoverable or as close to irrecoverable as possible. And believe it or not, even something as simple as a defrag might actually help you, because you are moving blocks around. You are you're moving your data around on your hard drive to make it more efficient. And ironically, you could actually write over top of some old data that way. So that's kind of a good thing in a way. This software comes in, which is much better for that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were thinking about using a deletion tool to either delete certain files or an entire partition, you could probably go back after that and use a CD such as WinPE or BartsPE or WinTernals Admin Pack 2005, which unfortunately is not free, to go back and defrag your hard drive, which moves everything around again, just to piss off the people that are coming after you.
All right. Yeah, you always want to piss them off.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, if they're coming for you to look for your data and you're having to do this quickly, there's a good chance they know what they're looking for anyways, so you're screwed anyways.
Right, yeah, very much. Very much the case, most likely, anyway. That's still not to say that you shouldn't take some of these precautions. There's nothing wrong with protecting your privacy and taking some steps to protect your privacy and protect your data, not only from, you know, potentially law enforcement, but quite honestly, if you're working at a company, if you're listening to this and thinking of this from a work aspect, we're not only talking, you know, hackers worrying about getting busted. Let's say you're at work and you want to make sure that you carry private source code or source code on your laptop that you work on, which actually hits pretty home pretty closely to me, and you don't want to leave it in an airport and have it fall into the wrong hands, I guess. There's a lot of corporate espionage out there, believe it or not. It's not just in the movies. There are people that'll play top dollar for data. So, you know, if you leave your laptop in the airport, you lose it, it gets stolen, whatever, you know, it'd be nice to kind of maybe use these tools in those cases as well. So the first one, of course, we already mentioned in the email in the very beginning, and that's DBAN or Derek's Boot and Nuke, which, again, you've had experience with this.
Yeah, it's either a, when you download it, it's a floppy image, or they actually do have a CD image of it. And it's updated pretty frequently, but it's usually just minor bug fixes, because you can't really change the standards that it uses without writing your own standard.
And the standards, of course, are like what we were talking about earlier, the 3-pass, the 7-pass, the Gutmann 35-pass.
Yeah, DBAN actually supports two different standards, which is the DoD 5220-22M standard and the Gutmann standard. And we already talked about the Gutmann standard and the fact that it's actually a 35-pass wipe. But it's interesting in how that breaks down, because it's actually not as random as people think it is. The first four passes are just random zeros and ones, but passes 5 through 31 however, are different. They throw in random zeros and ones for, I think, 1 to 6 flips of the bits, and then after that it's followed by 1 to 4 different flips of hex, just to throw in a little twist into it. But as I said earlier, Gutenman discourages using his own method on modern hardware because you cannot know what type of encoding the hard drive is using without having the proper tools to figure that part out. And that's at least $1,500 that you would have to drop just to figure something out. But
yeah,
the DoD standard of 5220-22M is at the three paths that we were talking about earlier. Each path consists of two wipes, which is writing ones, then zeros, and then flipping zeros to ones. And the seventh pass of it is actually a verification pass.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if this has been superseded by another DoD standard. I'm sure it has, but it was actually canceled as of 2004.
Hmm.
But
yeah, I've never heard of them having a new standard, but I'm
pretty sure they do, but it's probably still classified, and it's actually what's called military grade spec. So of course they can't release it to the general populace just yet.
And those actually coordinate with some terminology, which I'm not going to claim to know. But like if it's I think they're standard for any government hard drive. Like, you know, because the government of course does resell a lot of their equipment after it's done. So if the secretary's computer gets put out for auction at some point, they just use a three pass generally, depending on what kind of access he or she had. If it's a computer that actually had a little bit more sensitive data, and this is where, and again, I'm fuzzy on these terms. Maybe somebody can email me. I would like to know this. Somebody who knows these for sure, email me the difference between top secret and classified. And like, there's a term that literally means this is what you can and cannot do, and and do not have access. And these actually correspond. If it's a computer that has top secret, then it's supposed to use the 7 pass or the 35. I'm not sure which goes with which, but these actually coordinate with those.
Yeah, since I'm not actually in the government, I can't tell you what it is, but the one that you're talking about, whether you should know this or not, is called FYE, or For Your Eyes Only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's something heard in James Bond a lot. But if you have something that's an FYE classified drive or a top secret classified drive, there's a good chance that they're just going to take it and incinerate it instead because it's cheaper.
Yeah, and I think I started to talk about that at the very beginning, that, you know what, if you've got anything on there sensitive that you're really worried about, paranoid or otherwise, if you're over-paranoid or just, the cost of hard drives these days is so low that really the risk of reselling it, if you're that paranoid, it's just not worth it. I mean, you can buy another and replace it. Just really, really wipe the hell out of that old hard drive. Do a 35 pass on it. And again, just to put it in perspective, like a 7 pass goes, a 3 pass goes very fast. A 3 pass, I think, is actually enough that you could probably integrate that with the shell pretty easily. And I think a lot of those like cheap, crappy, what do they call them, shovelware, the crap you buy in Best Buy that's like 400 anti-hacker utilities on this CD. Hackers will never bother you again. Those crappy ones, they're usually like built in and it's like right-click to empty or delete recycle bin or stuff like that. It's usually just doing a quick three pass. It's almost invisible because it can go so quickly and write, you know, and like you said, ones and zeros. To simplify it, what it's doing is X number of passes, let's write all ones and then write all zeros, and then all ones. So you keep flipping those bits back and forth. And with that little variance in every one of them, when you do it 7 times, it's very hard to recover. 9 times, 12 times, the more wipes that you do, the harder it is for them to ever recover that data. So that is oversimplified. There are actually some algorithms. It's not simply zeros and ones every single other pass. They do mix in some different things based on what the bit rate is, or what the bits are that they want to try to flip. And they don't want them to be uniform, because if they're uniform, you can easily undo it and reverse the whole process. So there is some variance in the way they do it. But for visualization's sake, just think that they're writing over and over and over and over again to flip those bits around.
Yeah, because, I mean, like you said, some things do throw in extra data, which is the Gutenman spec. But there's also another one that not a lot of tools use, and it's called the DoD 5200.28-STD standard. And that's actually the seven pass wipe that you keep referring to.
The seven, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but it was also ratified 21 years ago, and from what I was able to find, I couldn't see if anything's actually surpassed it or superseded it, but I have a feeling that 5220-22M has actually superseded it, but I cannot find any data supporting that claim.
I thought the 22 was the three pass.
It is.
Okay.
But the actual 5200.28 STD pass is seven passes of just random ones and zeros. But like I said, it's 21 years old. Technology's changed a lot since then. So it's reliable. Usually, sometimes it's not, depending on what kind of hardware they throw at your drive.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
But, yeah.
All right,
yeah,
so
another
besides,
tool that's similar is one called BCY from a company called Jetico. Now, I personally use this one as well, and it works pretty well, but it prefers the Gutmann technique over the 5220-22M standard. But it's also one of the tools, the few tools that actually includes the 5200.28-STD standard. Since it is so old, I don't know why they chose to include it, but they did.
Hmm.
Now, I actually like the program because it is Windows-based, and back when I was using it, I was primarily Windows-based, but the program hasn't been updated in 4 years, so it's kind of a hit or miss whether you want to use it or not versus something like DBAN, which was just updated, I think, within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and actually, that's another kind of point to bring up here is there's no discrimination here on Windows tools versus Linux tools, which is better, which is whatever, you should be using Linux. No, you need whatever it is to wipe the operating system in question. So it's not like whether one's better than the other or which one's, you know, got more of this, that, or the other. It's which one works on the operating system that you're interested in. So it's not comparing across OSs. We're not saying that anyone's better than another one. It's just listing a lot of the options that are out there.
Yeah, you really can't compare any of these tools, whether they're Linux-based or Windows-based, and saying, oh, something on Linux is better versus something like DBAN or BCWhite, which are for Windows, and saying it's better, because you can't. They use the exact same standards.
Right.
And a standard is a standard, which is why it's called a standard. You can't change it. It's set in stone, so there's little variance between the programs.
Yeah, unless they've got, like, and you mentioned earlier, unless they've got some kind of customized algorithm that they've come up with, but I've never heard of any that's more secure or better than those ones we've already mentioned several times already.
Yeah, BCWipe actually does let you customize passes that you do. Like, you can do one section with BOD 5220-22M, then you could do a pass with Gutmann, and then follow that with a pass of the 22M again. But
I'm not
that's
sure
going to take a hell of a long time.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's going to accomplish, actually. Or, for that matter, chaining a 7-pass DOD with another 7-pass DOD, followed by another pass of 7. I mean, I don't know that I guess you're wiping it, you're doing that many more wipes, so I guess it's certainly going to be somewhat helpful, but I don't know if there's a diminishing returns at some point.
Well, in Gutmann's paper that he wrote on deletion of data from solid-state memory and hard drives, he actually pointed out that you can keep doing these, and it will help your odds. But it's all a point of doing it versus time. You can do it all day, but if you don't have the time, you need something that works quick.
Yeah,
so it's a real balance you got to work out.
Yeah, I think we've kind of started in that direction several times tonight. The time involved, to put it in perspective, the three pass can be pretty quickly, almost invisible to the operating system. It'll just be an extra hesitation when it deletes, writes three times over something, and then deletes it again. I guess it doesn't really have to delete it again. But that opposed to a 7, the way I have most of my system set up is I have my recycle bin set up that when I empty it, it's not actually, I have an erase. It'll automatically do a 7 pass, anything that I delete from the recycle bin. Now, again, we mentioned earlier that with the right software that can be recovered, but for me, I'm satisfied with that. It's better than just emptying the recycle bin, so it's something. And the time that it takes is, you know, an extra 30 seconds to a minute, depending on how many big files you've deleted, maybe 5 minutes if you've got an ISO or two in there. But the 35 pass, I've run a 35 pass on all my free space on my hard drive before, left it running overnight, probably 10 to 20 gigs, and it was still running, and I don't even think it was halfway. So you're talking about writing 20 gigs of data and then writing another 20 gigs of data with these algorithms, then another 20 gigs. It's slow. It takes a long time to do the 35 pass. So excellent point, you know, the trade-off between time and security. And that's, you know what? Not only with data forensics and data recovery, that's true of anything security-related. The more time you want to put into it, the more secure you can be. And that's a universal truth in security.
But it's also universal truth that the more time a hacker puts into something, the more successful they will be at breaking it.
Well, that would be, you know, there's the infinite monkey theory, of course.
Of course.
But, and if you don't know what that is, Google it. You'll find an interesting little story there.
Don't you mean Yahoo it, since you hate Google?
Yahoo it, MSN it, A9 it, whatever you want, whatever floats your boat.
Or you can use a fucking search engine.
Yeah, search engine of choice. There you go. All right, well, did you have a couple more? We'll kind of, let's see, we've still got a little time if you wanted to talk about some. I don't know if you have any other examples.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about two more, actually, Linux-based tools. One is called Shred, and it's actually available in almost every single modern distribution that's Linux-based. But it has a real huge problem. It's only used for singular file deletion, and it does not work on RAID, a caching file system such as NFS version 3, or any journaling file system. So if you're using Riser or XFS or anything like that, this won't work. If you've got hardware or software RAID, this won't work. And if, by God, you're using NFS for some reason, this isn't going to work either.
Hmm.
But it uses a mode that I couldn't actually find a lot of information about. It's maybe their own algorithm of 25 passes. And each pass is actually a different pattern that it uses. Like the Gutmann technique, you can Google up his paper and see that pass 5 through 31 is going to be the same thing every single time. But this 25 pass, I couldn't find any information about, so I can't tell you what it does passes 1 through 25 or passes 8 through 12.
Hmm.
But, I mean, it's an old tool. Like I said, it's in a Linux distribution that you have probably sitting on your desktop now. And if you just need to wipe one file, that's what it's good for. And the last one I really want to talk about is THC Secure Delete. Now, I'm sure some of you actually heard the name THC and know it has nothing to do with pot. It's actually from the Hacker's Choice, which is an old, old hackers group that's been around for probably over a decade now. It includes four different tools called SRM, SSwap, SMIM, and SFIL. Each one of them obviously do a little bit different thing. Things like SFIL actually just fills the whole hard drive with garbage data.
The garbage file?
Yeah, it just creates one giant garbage file.
Whoa.
For your Gibson.
Awesome.
So, I mean, that's a great thing to have for hackers, right?
Exactly.
And what Secure Delete actually touches on something that some of these other programs don't really get into, which is RAM wiping. Because a lot more people involved in forensics using EnCase and other tools are now delving deep into the RAM to see what's currently in RAM and what might be in your virtual RAM. Because obviously those things are still in RAM, they're still loaded, they haven't been cached out, and they haven't been pushed off the stack or anything, so they know exactly what you're looking at the time that they came in or at the time they analyzed that. But the command SMIM wipes your RAM completely. The only problem I actually found with this tool is, like I said, it was last updated 3 years ago, and I couldn't actually figure out what wiping scheme it's using. I don't know if it's Gutmann, any of the DoD standards, an Orange Book standard. I couldn't find it out. But knowing the guys at THC, it's probably something pretty hairy.
And another good point is the memory. I mean, we all know Windows and how it handles memory and swap files and things like that, but a good example of something like that would be, you know, like a password or an encryption key if you've got an encrypted hard drive. It's not going to write that out to the hard drive ever. It's going to keep something like that in memory. So if they can get on and grab a snapshot of what's in memory, that could be, you know, very useful for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and since we talked about what a journaling file system does earlier in the show, I do want to point out that aside from Encase and a few of the other more developed tools such as SleuthKit, almost nothing will actually work forensically on a journal file system to recover, not recover, but wipe data.
Hmm.
Now, not too many forensic tools actually do support reading a journal file system, so if you're using that, you sort of got a leg up on the competition already. But, like I said, Encase definitely works on Riser and XFS. So, be careful what you do with these tools. Be careful what you're doing if you're actually thinking about this in the first place.
Right, and actually, I guess that's probably a good segue to kind of close out here is, you know, the truth of the matter is all of these tools, well, the tools for protecting yourself are there's several free ones out there, open source ones, et cetera, et cetera, and which is great, and you know we always support that. Some of the forensic tools are as well. But as we said earlier, things like Encase, which is one of the biggest, you know, most commonly used ones, that and the time involved to go through all this data and stuff like that, it's no small feat. This is not something that is easy to do. This is not even as easy. I mean, I think if anybody has ever restored like an entire system from backup, you know what a pain it is to do that. That doesn't even cast a shadow on the hassle it is to go through these hard drives and try to recover this data and figure out what's there. It's not always as clean as clicking the button, letting the software run, and then magically you're back where you started from. There's a lot of hit and miss and mixed results in there. So, that being said, this is not something that they're just going to do to everybody that they bust, every hard drive, every, you know, they bust you for, I don't know, they come in your house and bust you for smoking pot. They're not going to grab your computer and just scan it for the hell of it just to see if they got something else. They couldn't legally anyway, but that's a whole other story. They probably, if they wanted to. So they're not just going to use this arbitrarily, think, you know, phishing or stabbing in the dark. They really have to want something pretty bad and want you for a pretty specific reason for them to go through this trouble. So if into doing something like that, I mean, then you should be thinking very seriously about doing 35 passes, and you should think very seriously about physical destruction, physical demolition of the hard drive. And it's probably, that could be a whole nother episode, and maybe it will be, but physically destroying the hard drive, I mean, you can go out on the global interweb and you can find lots of stories. I've seen, I was reading about someone who crashed their car into a lake or something and it was submerged underwater for 5 or 6 days and they pulled the hard drive out and were able to recover the data off of it.
Yeah.
I saw some where a house burned down and the laptop computer was burned down in the fire. It was burnt pretty bad, the whole laptop was, but they were able to recover most of the data. Lots of stories like that. So data, just because you physically destroy it, there was one, they experimented, they shot it, I think, with a shotgun or with a rifle or something, and were still able to recover most of the data, except the part that was obviously physically missing where the bullet penetrated the drive.
Yeah. Yeah, last week I actually wrote in an email about the email about physically destroying a drive. I read an article on how the DOD recovered a drive from Afghanistan that had been shot with an AK-47.
Mm.
Now, they plopped it underneath an electron microscope, started delving into the magnetic bits, and they were able to recover every single bit of information from that hard drive except where it had been shot. But given all the data that they already had, they were pretty much able to piece together what was missing from the giant hole in the hard drive. So, I mean, unless you're going to plan on sticking your hard drive in an incinerator, or if you have something like thermite, and if you have that, where did you get it?
And you got to be careful with it. Kind of like, and speaking of that, I'm sorry, to go back, I meant to say this very much earlier, that Derek's bootin' nuke, you know, I think we said something about, you know, if you're really paranoid, I think the email said that if you're really paranoid, keep it in your hard drive in case you need it in an emergency, but be damn careful about it. Don't accidentally wipe yourself out, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you have to be careful with any of these wiping tools, because one wrong click, one wrong disk.
We will not be held responsible here at Binary Revolution Radio for any fuck-upness you have done of your hard drive.
Exactly.
But if you really physically wanted to get rid of it, you know, I do still think that fire is a pretty good way, because if you're physically burning away, I mean, just setting it on fire and thinking that's it, no. But
no.
Maybe burning it, soaking it in gasoline, oil, burning it really hardcore so that it melts into a slag of molten metal, that'll do it. Any kind of melting it down, throwing it in a volcano, kind of melting it down, you know what I'm saying? That's going to be something that's going to be damn near impossible to recover.
Yeah, it's got to be something high temperature, like incineration. Otherwise, they might be able to get something off those platters that they can recover.
You could even probably... Wow, this would make a great episode of Hack TV. Somebody out there who wants to try this, you could probably take a chainsaw to that bad boy and shred it up into just as fine of a grain as you can. Cross-cut that bad boy into mincemeat. Technically, there's still surface area that could be data could be pulled off of, but they'd have to really do a lot of reassembling. They'd have to really want you pretty damn bad. You'd have to be Osama bin Laden himself for them to go to the trouble of doing that. But they could reconstruct that, theoretically, and I bet you they could get quite a bit off of there, except for the part that you actually shaved through with that was physically missing.
Yeah, but like you said, they would really need to be going after you. You'd have to be like a global
Absolutely.
Child pornography smut peddler for them to be going after you and spend probably months reconstructing your hard drive itself.
So if you fit that description, get to work. Get out there quickly. Osama, if you're listening, better get to work on that quick. Oh, and by the way, fuck you. Okay. You cock-smoking bastard! All right. I thought I'd get that out there. Why not? Fucker. Anyway, so bottom line is, yeah, they're not going to waste their time checking every single hard drive that come in. They don't have, A, the manpower, time to do it, and they don't have the equipment. Those electron microscopes that you referred to earlier, those are not cheap. They're very slow. I mean, you're taking a microscope and going bit by bit reconstructing stuff. It's slow stuff. It's expensive. You really have to be somebody there willing to put the time in to do it. And unless you've really, really, really done something that they want you for, you're pretty safe there. So wipe that thing 35 passes. If it takes you a week to do it, and then go out and throw it in a fire barrel, burn the hell out of it, melt it, film it all for Hack TV. I think it'd be fun to watch. But unless you're doing just some really hardcore shit, you're probably fine. And I think you said this earlier, if you're doing some hardcore shit, they're probably already watching you anyway. You're already screwed.
Yeah, they know what you have already. So even destroying it is going to be another offense added to your record, because that's actually destruction of evidence and obstruction of justice. So
which, you know.
If you do that, you're fucked.
But you know what? Yeah, that's, you got to take that chance. Of course, I'm not condoning this, but my personal opinion is, if you're in that deep, the least charge that you need to be worried about is tampering with evidence. if you're into something else, I mean, and you can get off with that, you're in good shape.
Yeah, because if you're going to start tampering with the evidence and obstructing with justice, that's a one-way ticket to fuck me in the ass prison.
That's going to be rough stuff. Of course, if it's that versus, I don't know, child pornography, not only are you going into federal pound me in the ass prison, but you're going there with a pedophile flag on your head too, so.
Oh, and they're probably going to kill you in the first week you're there.
Yeah, if you even make it that long.
Exactly.
Wow, I think we've had more pedophilia talk on this episode than we've ever had on an episode of Binary Revolution Radio. I think that's pretty disturbing.
And I think after this show, I'm going to have to get a new handle and probably move a couple states.
Yeah, I think I'm going to wipe my hard drive 35 times just because they might come following up on us for the topic. Oh, well, all right, let's close things up here. I think that was a pretty good, nice, full show there. I wish we had time for that Trio 700 review, but I guess we'll do that another day.
Sorry, Tom. Couldn't fit it in.
No, well, what are you going to do? Damn it. You can't please everybody. You can't please all of the people all the time. You know, I get a lot of people that, you know, say they don't like this about the show, or they wish we touched on these topics more or these topics less. But you know what? Until you've actually done it, it's not nearly as easy as people think to come up with a lot of good topics and to come up with people that are knowledgeable. I don't mind when people say these kind of things. I'll take advice. I'm all for trying to, you know, make the show better and listening to everyone's opinion. But the bottom line, the thing that really kind of is, I find it comedic now, I find it very funny, is that after all of this stuff, they'll give you all this advice, you should do this, you should do this, and you say, okay, well, why don't you come on this episode and help me? Oh, well, because I can't, I don't have time, I don't know that I could talk about this, I don't do... Everybody's got opinions, but you know what? Put up or shut up. Actions speak louder than words, and we need more action in the hacking community. We need more action in the BinRev community, and I need more action in my personal life. So if any ladies out there would like to send me... No, I'm just joking. I'm not joking, but I am joking.
Well, if you look at Craigslist, I'm sure you can find some.
You can find just about anything there, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so yeah, let's close it up here. And on a serious note, you know, I know this is kind of corny, but I've done this every year, 3 years that I've been doing the show. This is going to be at the almost by the day before next show. This is Tuesday the 23rd, but coming up Monday, 6 days from today, is Memorial Day, which is an important holiday. It is something very, very sincere. Just if you're listening to this right now, just pop up Google. I know you're all listening on the computer in your headphones or sitting there at your laptop, your desktop, whatever. Pop open Google and do a quick search for Memorial Day, or just go to Wikipedia. I'm sure there's a Memorial Day entry. Just read about what Memorial Day is. Just understand what it is. It's not just a day off of work. You know, it doesn't hurt to know a little bit about what the day is about. So please go out there and just do 2 minutes. Just do a two-minute read, find out what it's about, and that's, I think, would be a good thing to do on such a nice holiday.
I agree, and I think any vets you know, call them, write them, or walk up to them on the street and say thank you.
Thank you. It's nothing, just a simple little thank you, because you know what? I say this as a joke, but it's still in some way sincere. Better them than me. They're doing something that I don't want to have to do, and I'm damn thankful of it. I'll do it if I have to, but I'm damn thankful that they're out there doing what they do and have gone out in the past and done what they've done, and that's what Memorial Day is about. So, okay, what else? Let's see. Shout-outs. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to stall for you? You want me to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
All right. Well, my shouts this week, actually some good shout-outs. First of all, to Kadarian, who is our new show notes writer. So congratulations to Kadarian. We're catching up on some of the show notes that were missed here these last couple months, so... Give us time, and we'll get those things caught up and up to date.
Yeah, a hell of a job ahead of you.
Yeah, he's got a lot of work. Have to give out congratulations to Black Ratchet, who is now shackled for the rest of his life. Black Ratchet, congratulations, my friend. Take your hiatus and enjoy all the perks that come with all of that. And what kind of shouts do you got? Do you have?
I'm going to shout out to Freak Nurse, my girlfriend. BR561, of course, Channel BinRev and Channel Infonomicon, Mayaflex, Skank Neasy, who is my coworker, and Channel Disguise.
Tell Skank Neasy I said hi.
I sure will.
All right. And let's see. Site of the week this week is Zillow.com, Zillow.com. All your home value docs have been dropped. Go check that site out. It'll tell you how much your house is worth, your neighbor's house, your friend's house, your enemy's house, your whatever. And it's all kind of tied into, I think it's not Google Maps, I think it's actually MSN. But basically using that whole MSN interface, fly down, look at the houses, and it'll show you how much they're all worth right over top of it on the fly, which is kind of cool in a perverse way.
Yeah, and I've got two sites of the week I want to talk about.
Oh, man, you got sites of the week? Cool.
Of course I do. One is tinyurl.com slash Lugal. That's L-U-G as in golf, E as in echo, L.
Okay. What is that? You're going to tell us what it is?
Do what?
You're going to tell us what it is? You can't drop a tiny URL without telling us what it is.
Yeah, but where's the fun in that? It's actually a website called buzzsurf.com telling you how to create a tunnel through your network wherever you may be to get around your firewalls.
Okay.
I'll let people take that as they will.
If that ends up taking people to Goatsy, I'm going to drop your email address and let them all flame you.
Oh, no, it doesn't, I promise.
Okay.
And the other site is band names, not brand names. This is a little personal, you know, pump for myself. This is a website I've been doing It's the actual website address is bravonova.com. Yeah, it's really repetitive, but screw you.
Okay.
It's just a bunch of music reviews about CDs that I bought and things like that.
Very cool.
I have an opinion, and I'm going to voice it.
All right, and speaking of music, our closing music tonight, you and I have different tastes in music, so I figured I'll let you pick out the closing music tonight. Of course, something legal that we can have are able to use, which is always difficult to pull out. But what did you come up with?
All right,
Is it something about eating babies from
a band called Wallachia. They are Norwegian. It's actually what I guess these days you would call traditional black metal, or in some cases progressive black metal. And if you like the song, go to last.fm/user/tobiz for more of my own recommendations on this. And the song is actually called Last of My Kind. Enjoy.
And is this like a baby-killing, death metal, stomping on puppies, kind of heavy thrashing, destroy everything rock, or what?
Not this song, but I was trying to find one like that, but you kind of didn't like the other ones I picked out. This is a song about being the last of the Transylvanian princes, such as Vlad Tepes III, which is a huge reoccurring theme in all of their songs.
Oh, my goodness. All right, well, about vampires. Enjoy that, and if you have feedback on this or any episode, or just want to chat for whatever reason, or send me naked pictures of yourself, if you're a hot chick.
Yeah,
or even a not hot chick. Send them to radio@benrev.com, and we are going to wrap it up. We're going to throw this closing music on, and we've got pretty much a full show. As a matter of fact, we're a little bit over. So, Tobiz, thank you again for being on the show, and we will see or hear, or you will hear us next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.